This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Great hour in store for you here on Money Moves. Coming up in 30 minutes, Sean Green's going to be with us. Sports Gambling Podcast. Be back with us on Friday nights for the football season. Get his thoughts on some of his contributions for the College Football Betting Guide. And we did talk about him a couple of days ago, but we will have to ask about the Philadelphia Eagles and what is in store for the 2026 season. But speaking of the College Football Betting Guide, make sure you get your hands on it. VSiN.com/subscribe. Cannot say enough about the work myself and my compatriots did on that thing. A labor of love. Really do enjoy it. I got to write the SEC and the Mountain West, and I think every single one of my colleagues who did some at-length writing in this bad boy did an absolutely tremendous job. You can sign up now for as little as $9.99, and that includes the guide because it includes everything we do as an introductory offer. So go and check it out. VSiN.com/subscribe. That is VSiN.com/subscribe. Includes a lot of stuff in there. Matt Youmans has his preseason top 50. And, of course, previews for every single one of the FBS teams. Best bets from all of our hosts here at the network, too. It's a really good, really good articles about some different topics. Tomorrow, we'll get into Adam Burke's write-up about the varying home field advantages in college football, which is a great piece in there amongst some others. So go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Now, with that, even though Stormy's not here today, I will ride solo for this leg of our training camp tour. Luckily, we don't have to go far.
Join Stormy and JBT as they go on the Money Moves NFL training camp tour.
Yeah, we're not going anywhere from the New York Jets to the New York Giants. I mean, I even think it's I don't even think we need to do like the move here on the graphic, but either way, we get it done. I was thinking of a word, but I could not get it right on the tip of my tongue. Either way, the New York Giants are up for our training camp tour. A really fascinating team as John Harbaugh takes over the New York Giants, as he said in his first meeting with the team. Again, the best part of that video, if you have not seen John Harbaugh's introduction to the New York Giants, was his question to the team, "Are you nervous?" To which somebody said, "No." This did not go well in terms of the introduction to us and his first foray as head coach, but a lot of people do believe that Harbaugh is going to be a pretty good addition for this staff, and I think he's got the cachet from what we have seen in his time in Baltimore to at least get that benefit of the doubt. 2025 did not go well for the New York Giants. That's why Harbaugh is here. They had a 2025 record of 4-13. This year, win total set at 7.5. Pick -110, division wins 2.5, under -120. Most wins 86-1, fewest wins 30-1, largely expected to finish in the middle of the pack. For the playoffs, +225 to make it, you're laying 320 for them to miss it. 6-1 to win the division, 35-1 to win the NFC, 70-1 to win the Super Bowl. Your top MVP candidate, Jackson Dart at 45-1. And then, of course, Coach of the Year. You see the short number next to his name, that guy right there, if you're watching up at VSiN.com, John Harbaugh. And if you're not watching up at VSiN.com, it's part of a VSiN Pro subscription, so check it out now. But let's talk about some of the things that I think are most important about the New York Giants. We'll start with the obvious. You saw the red non-contact jersey. Jackson Dart will be front and center. Dart, of course, coming in after a year that I think was relatively solid for a rookie. Ended up completing 63% of his passes, 6.7 yards per attempt through the air, 15 touchdowns to 5 interceptions. Also, of course, showed the mobility that a lot of us expected he could have. Ran for 487 yards and an additional nine touchdowns. So where do we start with Dart? And I think there's a couple of things that we start with. But first and foremost is just the, hey, will you be better? I think that's just one of the asks that you have to have for a second-year quarterback. What is the second season going to look like? The thing that works against him to an extent is that you're not staying in the same offense. Matt Nagy's coming over. John Harbaugh's taking over. So you look at this and you say, well, with Harbaugh and his system, we'll call it, because also part of the offensive staff, Greg Roman coming over, the senior offensive assistant. So we know some of the things and principles that Harbaugh is going to want to rely on here. And will Jackson Dart be able to handle those responsibilities? I think generally I'm not out on Jackson Dart, but I do think that when you talk about quarterbacks like a Jackson Dart, where there's so much excitement about what he potentially could be, we do tend to ignore some of the negatives around players like that. And I think with Dart, one of the things you really have to clean up is pocket presence, his ability to operate from said pocket, and the penchant for inviting pressure. And I think that is always going to be a pretty big deal. But let's talk about Dart from that standpoint. Under pressure last season on 36.7% of his dropbacks, that is a relatively high number. The higher number, though, and the more worrisome thing for Dart that he has to improve on, amongst qualified quarterbacks in the National Football League last year, according to Pro Football Focus, led the league, which is not a good thing to lead the league in terms of rate of pressures and dropbacks with some responsibility of invited pressure. So in other words, of the percentage of all of the pressures that you suffered as a quarterback, how many were on you for holding on to the football too long? For Dart, 39.1% led all quarterbacks last year. It's a very high number. And think about this. Not only did he lead all quarterbacks, 39.1% was his rate. Second most was Shedeur Sanders at 29.1%. Gives you an idea of just how much Jackson Dart was holding onto the football, inviting pressure. Those are the things that really do need to change here if you're talking about Dart. And there were some signs, right? When he was kept clean on 63% of his dropbacks a season ago, completed 71% of his passes, averaged 6.9 yards per attempt, threw for 9 touchdowns, committed 8 turnover-worthy plays. You can whittle that down, but still, on those dropbacks, a turnover-worthy play rate of under 3%. That is something that you want to work with here if you're talking about taking care of the football if you're Dart. But those things have to improve. Also has to improve a little bit in other facets, right? Especially when he was blitzed. He did a pretty good job. But when not blitzed, you saw his numbers suffer just a little bit. In fact, when teams elected to drop into coverage as opposed to send an extra rusher at Jackson Dart, his turnover-worthy play rate spiked to 3.8%. He committed 11 of his 15 turnover-worthy plays when facing a team that did not blitz. That's about reading coverages. Maybe there's some disguise coverages in there. But he's got to be better at operating in the pocket, not inviting pressure, being able to read coverages. And I'm not going to say he can't, but I would assume that those are the things that you're going to see Jackson Dart work on as you move forward for this year. As far as the offense as a whole, I think you have the pieces here to be relatively effective. I don't think that this is going to be a group that by the end of the season we're going to look at and say, hey, this is a top 10 offense in the National Football League, but should be able to finish right around where they were, maybe even better if Dart takes these improvements that ended up finishing 17th in expected points added per play a season ago. If you look at success rate for the New York Giants, a little bit further down the board at 26th, when you see the discrepancy in terms of expected points added but success rate, it's generally a reliance on explosive plays, right? Success rate, you're not as consistent down to down, not getting the percentage of yards on any given down and situation that you should be getting in those spots. And yet, your EPA is higher because you get some of those explosive and chunk plays. You don't want to rely on those because that doesn't lead to consistency. So getting those two things to meet a little bit more in the middle would be a success for Dart and the Giants so far this year. But I think really the reality of looking at the Giants and saying, okay, 7.5 is a win total. Can they go over that? Can they get into the postseason? It's really going to depend on if this defense is going to be any better, specifically up front. If you look at one of the things that really held back the New York Giants a season ago, it was a defense that was abysmal against the run. Some of the numbers for you. Yards per attempt, they allowed 5.3 per carry, 32nd in the NFL. They were 31st in rush yards per game at 145.3. Dead last in expected points added per rush by opponents. Success rate overall, we talked about that 25th, but generally they have to be much better in that regard. And you look at other metrics like advanced line yards and things like that, adjusted line yards, excuse me, they were poor. They don't really do too much to add to the three-down linemen they run with in this 3-4 set that they usually run out there on defense. So they're probably not going to be much better. Tremaine Edmonds comes in the middle of this defense to help with those linebackers. They draft Arvell Reese, but Reese more of an outside linebacker on the edge, so don't know if that's really going to help a ton when you're talking about some of your weaknesses up the middle. But that is a really big strength for this group overall. Edge rusher is pretty strong. You've got Burns. Abdul Carter was actually really good last year despite not racking up the sacks. Led all rookies in total pressures a season ago and by a wide margin. Ended up with 66 total pressures last season, by far more than the second place finisher amongst rookie edge rushers and just defenders overall in the National Football League last year. So there are some pieces. But if you're not going to be better in that regard, if you're not going to be better as a secondary as well, not exactly a secondary that generated a lot of big plays in terms of turnovers either, that is something that ultimately, you know, if I'm an opposing offense, why would I put myself in a position to potentially face a trio of edge rushers and more that could get after my guy when the reality is I can just run the ball, keep my quarterback out of positions in which they're going to have to face an edge rushing team like they have. So where does this lead us with the Giants? I tend to think personally that the market is just a little high on where the Giants ultimately are going to finish. The addition of Harbaugh on the staff have a lot of people excited, and I think I understand that to that extent, but I think this is generally priced relatively well. And just think back on the history of teams for the most part over the last few years. Yes, you have your outliers, right? You have these teams that a lot is expected of them early on in new regimes or with new quarterbacks, and some of them we will reach that. In this division, Jaden Daniels, his rookie year, one of those teams, made it to an NFC Championship game. Houston Texans and C.J. Stroud's first year made a run as well. But commonality there is a couple of things, but the most of which is it is a brand new product, if you will. New quarterbacks, not really knowing that much in the NFL. You know what Jackson Dart is. You know what some of his tendencies are. And I think a better comp for what New York is this year is the Chicago Bears 2 years ago. I think a lot of people were really excited about what Chicago could potentially be 2 seasons ago. Very high win total of 8.5, were priced to the moon in a lot of different ways, and ultimately fell short of expectations. And it was the following year, 2025, in which you really saw them take a tangible step forward. And I think that might be the case here for the New York Giants. We tend to lean under 7.5, because here's the other part. What if inside of this division, and you see their schedule here too, because that's the other part about it, the 21st ranked schedule in terms of opponent win totals, it's going to be a relatively challenging schedule when you look at their opponents. But that's also with the win totals. What if, for example, the Commanders are the Jaden Daniels rookie year version of the Washington Commanders that made it to an NFC Championship game? They could be much better. What if I'm wrong on the Indianapolis Colts and they're actually a competent team and Daniel Jones is fully healthy? That spot gets a little bit more difficult. What if I'm right about the Browns? I think generally what I'm looking at here is 7 wins seems like a really solid season for the New York Giants, and I would think that under is the way to go and that they're not going to reach some of the expectations that many in the market believe that they can. Speaking of expectations, you should have high expectations for the next episode here on our Circa Survivor quest for $18.7 million documentary heating up. Tomorrow's episode is going to be fantastic. The Turning Point, named that for a good reason. Week 5, for the first time in Circa Survivor history, number one pick of the week goes down in flames on a Thursday night. $18.7 million on the line. You know that. Watch the next episode tomorrow, 9 p.m. Eastern, here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And if you need to catch up, don't worry. We've got you. Episodes 1 and 2 on YouTube right now. Just search VSiN Live. All right, when we come back, I love the folks on our network, but one of them said one of the stupidest things I can ever hear, and I think that we have to destroy him. We'll tell you who it is, what they said when we return. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. VSiN Pro gives you access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Arrogance at times is a word that I think goes hand in hand when it comes to sports bettors and pundits overall in the not only betting community but in sports as well. And I will exercise some arrogance here in coming up in a couple of minutes because I will absolutely destroy one of my colleagues with a ridiculous opinion that they had earlier today on the network. But I bring up arrogance as well because some of the arrogance that is thrown out there, too, is the sports betting market knows all. It is a much better indicator than anything you could ever think of. And at times I push back on that. We've talked about it, especially when it comes to information-based markets. And then every once in a while, somebody comes along where you're like, you know, the betting people have a pretty good point when it comes to the accuracy and projecting and rankings and whatnot. The coaches poll came out today, for those who had missed it. Ohio State, your number one team in the country, not a surprise, 38 first-place votes. But what's interesting is the smattering of first-place votes that went to other places. Oregon got 6, Georgia got 7, Indiana got 14, but finished 6th in the coaches' poll, which is kind of insane when you think about it. The second most first-place votes, and yet the Hoosiers finished 6th, which means that there was quite the discrepancy for some coaches of where they're putting the Hoosiers on their overall ballot. And the team that had the least first-place votes still had 2, Texas, which is where we'll start. I wrote the SEC for the College Football Betting Guide. Check it out now, vsin.com/subscribe. Arch Manning, a point of contention for many, largely expected to be another Manning, correct? Obviously the last name, the pedigree, but didn't exactly hit the ground running in the first game of his collegiate career as a full-time starter, and last season for the Longhorns didn't exactly go as you would expect. He is the second choice on the board to win the Heisman, plus 750 behind C.J. Carr of Notre Dame, who we just talked about with Tim Murray. Check it out wherever you get your podcast, both the College Football Betting Podcast and our own. He joined us in the first hour. But then sometimes when there is a polarizing figure such as Arch Manning and some who maybe don't have the knowledge, the brain power to actually take in the entirety of what Arch Manning's season was, will then say stupid things like John Mateer is better than Arch Manning. Dustin Sweetelson is part of the Summer of Swede earlier today on a numbers game. Hit it.
I think Arch Manning should not be the best number one quarterback in the country. It's just the pedigree's there, the name is there, the ability might be there. I don't see the substance being there for Manning. In fact, I don't know if Manning cracks my top five.
Whew.
Like, that's legitimately.
Just the up and down nature of last season, you just don't think he's putting enough out there yet to be number one on a list?
I think he's in the best situation. I think he has a ton of help this year. Now, he didn't have a ton of help last year. They had injuries and other issues, but they still had plenty of talent.
Yeah, it's Texas.
Yeah, I didn't see him as being a guy that elevates the players around him. I think he needs the other players around him to elevate his game.
Dustin would go on to say that John Mateer is better than Arch Manning. But what I love about Swede's breakdown there is cutting down his own point when he throws in nonchalantly, I know they had injuries and other stuff. Yeah, that's part of the issue here, Swedelson. So let's talk about this. And by the way, he's building on the topic. Paul Snow had his top quarterbacks in the college football betting guide. Arch Manning for Paul Stone's top 15 quarterbacks. Number one, number two is Trinidad Chambliss. Number three was C.J. Card. Number four is Dante Moore. Number five was Gunnar Stockton. Number six was Julian Say. And number seven was John Mateer. But let's talk about Arch Manning for a second. And I think I am relatively high on Texas. And in fact, if you check out Pod to the Futures when it comes out a little bit later today, one of the things that Mitch and I talked about on the episode earlier this morning was the fact that I kind of have a trust in Steve Sarkisian. I don't think many people do, but did win a couple of CFP games with Quinn Ewers and actually got this team to perform relatively well a couple of years ago. So I trust that Sark, when the pieces are put together and the rosters, I think, healthier and in a better place, that they're going to be a pretty competent team. You see them, they're plus 750 to win the national championship. But let's actually give some details to Arch as to why potentially Manning struggled the way that he did. And what's funny is when it comes to struggling for Arch Manning a season ago, you're still talking about a quarterback that put together a pretty solid statistical season, threw for 3,163 yards, 26 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, on an average depth of target of 9.7 yards downfield, did a pretty good job. But for Arch last year, one of the things that sticks out is the fact that his offensive line was one of the worst in the SEC when it came to pass pro. And in fact, by one metric, was the absolute worst. Amongst qualified quarterbacks in the Southeastern Conference, Arch Manning was under pressure the most often amongst all of them. 36% of his dropbacks a season ago. His total, 165 dropbacks, were the most in the SEC. And the running game, the issues were really clear for Arch Manning as well. Texas averages 4.2 yards per carry, 138 yards per game in 2025. So in the offseason, in the transfer portal, they go out and they hit it hard. They bring in Melvin Ciani from Wake Forest, get a kid from Western Kentucky that's going to plug in along this offensive line as well. Tarik Goosby is back. So is center Connor Robertson. So all of a sudden, you're looking at an offensive line that should be greatly fixed. We should not view quarterbacks as this sole entity that is responsible for all things on a field when there are moving parts that will affect the play of a quarterback, and one of them was the offensive line in front of Arch Manning. And I think if you buy into the overall improvements along this offensive line, the running game gets a little bit better, Arch Manning gets better, and while Dustin tried to poo-poo it a little bit down the stretch, Texas did go 5-1 straight up, 3-2-1 against the spread, and in those games, he averaged 7.8 yards per attempt, threw 14 touchdowns and a turnover-worthy play rate of just 1.2%. Say what you want about the level of competition, he looked every bit of the part against that level of competition with a bad offensive line, and I think all of this leads to Texas being a pretty interesting team, Arch potentially being a quarterback that can win the Heisman. Look at their schedule, too. The Longhorns don't leave the state of Texas. I shouldn't put it that way. They leave the state of Texas one time from the start of the season to the beginning of November. Look at this thing. Texas State, Ohio State, UTSA, they go on the road against Tennessee. The Oklahoma game is in Dallas. They play Florida at home. And then they get Ole Miss and Mississippi State. They leave Texas one time before Halloween is over. That's it. This schedule is set up really nicely for them. If the improvements are there, this Texas team is going to be, I think, pretty formidable. Arch is going to be a lot better. And Dustin Swedelson will look absolutely ridiculous for suggesting, just a mere thought, that John Mateer, who couldn't complete a forward pass, yes, the hand injury, and I wrote about that in the guide, but right now we're trashing Dustin, so we don't need malicious facts to get in the way, that Arch Manning is going to be a pretty competent quarterback and prove Paul Stone correct in our college football betting guide that he is the number one quarterback in the country. But Texas is not anywhere near a cellar dweller at all in the SEC. They have national championship aspirations, could potentially win the SEC. I wanted to take a little bit of a different look here at the SEC in the last couple of minutes, and we can build on this a little bit tomorrow too. We always talk so much about these good teams. I mean, look at our show today. We've talked even in the Major League Baseball trade deadline. We've talked about the buyers. We didn't really talk about the sellers. We talked about Notre Dame with Tim Murray. We talked about potential conference winners in the Mountain West and the Pac-12 and making it to the college football playoff. We're talking about Texas here. But I think it's really interesting to look at some of the teams that are projected to finish near the bottom of their respective conferences, discuss some of their win totals and a little bit more. So let's start in the SEC, and let's start at the top alphabetically. We don't need to talk about it from any different ranking perspective. Arkansas, a team that is projected to have a relatively poor season by many different standards. Razorbacks win total 4.5, shaded to the under at minus 166. It's going to be a pretty interesting year for this group. Sam Pittman loses his job last September. They come in and they bring in Ryan Silverfield from Memphis. Silverfield never won the AEC in his time at Memphis, never even made it to the conference title game, but did win 50 games, got to four bowls and won them. So this is a guy that can build up a program. Arkansas has won 9 games just once since its last double-digit win season. That was in 2011. So just getting back to a bowl is going to be relatively strong for this team. You see it right there. They're 201 to win the SEC. The three burning questions that I had for Arkansas, the first of which is, of course, going to be centered around quarterback. What can KJ Jackson provide as a starting quarterback? He's allegedly in a battle with Memphis transfer AJ Hill, but if all camp begins. But I pretty much believe that Jackson's going to be the guy. You read some of the reporting out of Arkansas. It is largely expected by media in the area that Jackson is eventually going to take over. He appeared in 5 games last season, played at length, though, in the final 2. Texas and Missouri in those contests completed 58% of his passes, 332 yards and 2 touchdowns, added 41 yards on the ground and a touchdown as well. Should be better with Silverfield here, but he looked like he had good ability to be a good pocket passer, good presence, decent touch. I think there's some really good upside here for Jackson, but the production at skill position is going to be interesting. Braylon Russell, 55 rushing attempts, 291 yards, the lead returnee on the ground. You get C.J. Brown, 28 receptions, 319 yards, a top returning receiver. You get Sutton Smith, who followed Silverfield from Memphis. They nabbed Jasper Parker from Michigan as well to fill out the running back rotation. But you do have questions about some of the skill position talent and how much this defense can improve as well. But ultimately, you get to 4.5 for the win total, and then you look at that schedule for Arkansas, and you realize, while Silverfield might have a team that ultimately plays a little bit better this year, don't know if they're actually going to reach some of the expectations to get the 5 wins. Got to go to Utah, Texas A&M, Texas. They host Georgia and LSU. There's some spots in the schedule where you can steal some victories, but even then, I think you're stretching some when you're assuming that they could win some of those games. Tulsa, Missouri, South Carolina, potential wins. Vandy and Auburn on the road. I'm high on Auburn, so I don't think that's going to be the case. 4 wins and maybe a strong ATS season in the card for the Razorbacks, but I do think one of these cellar dwellers at the bottom, which we'll expand on, could potentially get over their win total. We'll tell you who that is, and it might not be who you expect in the SEC. Preseason football starts this week, though. Time to book your trip to Vegas. Winner's Circle Proxy, VSIN's preferred proxy service. After your required in-person registration, they handle your weekly submissions so you can make your picks from anywhere. One trip to Vegas, play all season long. Schedule your appointment now at winnerscircleproxy.com. All right, we'll take our break here. On the other side, let's get back to the National Football League ever so briefly. We'll get back to the College Football Guide as well. But Sean Green's going to be with us coming up here in about 5 minutes. Get his thoughts on his Eagles. There's some interesting angles. We talked about Philly as part of our training camp tour a couple of days ago. But what is the high side for Philadelphia? Is there a couple of awards that we can maybe bet on here, both with the coaching staff and with the players themselves? And he had a unique contribution to the College Football Betting Guide among some of the best bets, a very rare selection. He was the only one to do it. We'll tell you what it is when we come back.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
You know, the greatest laid plans of mice and men, they say, often go awry. And I had a plan here to come in and to discuss some Philadelphia Eagles discussion and maybe a little bit on the College Football Betting Guide and some selections from one Sean Green, who was nice enough to join us here on the Progressive Guest Line. But as I scroll through Sean Green's Twitter up on X at Sean T. Green, I stumble upon what looks to be Mountain West picks. So, of course, you know I'm in. And I got to say, I dig this, Sean. I think there's 2 Mountain West dark horses, one of which just lost their leading receiver in Pofele Ashlock. So I think you kind of mark a little bit of Hawaii with a asterisk. But I think the Air Force Falcons are going to be pretty damn good. And I think a lot of people are going to be surprised. And it was a triumvirate. All 3 of you had Air Force at plus 550 to win the Mountain West.
Yes. So, well, a lot of it, hats off to Colby, who is incredibly sharp, and he interviewed Troy Calhoun at their media day at Mountain West, and he's a relationship with the beat reporter over at Air Force, and he was feeding some tips on the teams. Like last year, he's normally somewhat high on the team, but this year in particular, he's like really high. Even the past couple of years, he wasn't as optimistic. Just, you know, I'm a big Troy Calhoun fan, right to start off there. You know, back-to-back losing seasons. Last time they had back-to-back losing seasons, they came back with an 11-2 run there. Liam Sarka, I like what I've seen out of him. He feels like the perfect dual threat Air Force quarterback. You get the veteran defense. Maybe I don't think the defense is going to be amazing, but I think it's going to be better than we've seen in the previous 2 years. I think that's going to be good enough with a high-powered offense. Phil Steele had him as one of his most improved teams. I do think the Mountain West is pretty open this year, and at plus 550, you know, I like UNLV. But then again, you know, like the one score games, maybe it eventually catches up to them. I just think this is a nice time to catch Air Force at plus 550. I'm in. So, yeah, aim high. Let's go Falcons.
Couldn't agree more. If you're watching up at VSiN.com, we throw up the odds to win the Mountain West to the point of it being wide open. If any one of those five teams in the left-hand column were to win this thing, UNLV, New Mexico, North Dakota State, Hawaii, Air Force, I don't think I would be that surprised. I'd be somewhat surprised if the Bison pulled it off, but I'm a little bit lower on them than I think the betting market, obviously, and some others. But we won't focus on the Mountain West anymore. I want to talk about some hardcore topics with you when it comes to your boys, the Philadelphia Eagles. So we can get on the minutia. We had our training camp tour the other day. We stopped in Philly. We talked a little bit about your team. And I threw this out. I want to get your thoughts on this. The market is not up yet, but it has been posted before. And I think you guys did a lot on Jim Bob Cooter last year for assistant coach of the year. What do you think we're going to get Sean Mannion at to win assistant coach of the year? Because a lot is being made of his role as offensive coordinator and helping fix, I guess we'll use, for lack of a better term, Jalen Hurts and this group as a whole. I kind of want to buy into the hype, and I think he might be great, and this offense might be pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, when they hang the number for assistant coach of the year, Sean Mannion is definitely someone worth taking a look at. And you look at the history here of the Eagles losing in the wild card round. Hurts and Sirianni have been together here for 5 years, made the playoffs every year. Twice they've had tough wild card losses. They've come back the following year by making the Super Bowl and then obviously winning it in 2024. And both times, both reaching the Super Bowl and then winning the Super Bowl, the offensive coordinator went on to a head coaching job with Shane Steichen and Kellen Moore. So the idea that Sean Mannion's coming in here, everything is kind of clicking right now with the Hurts play action. Honestly, to me, I was never a Kevin Petullo fan. I didn't think they should fire him in season. I was obviously not happy with the offense. But to me, the quiet thing that's going to be huge for this team is getting the offensive line healthy. Lane Johnson, Landon Dickerson, like those guys, Cam Jurgens, who were like playing through stuff the entire season. Obviously, Lane missed a ton of it. Just getting that offensive line healthy, I think, is going to be huge. And it's going to make Sean Mannion look a lot better, and they get the play action going. You know, the entire Eagles fan base has been screaming, throw it over the middle. Hurts can't throw it over the middle. He starts throwing over the middle in a favorable schedule, and Mannion's going to get a ton of hype, and he's very good in the press so far. So a lot of optimism about Sean Mannion.
So how does the optimism manifest? Win totals 10.5, overs plus 115. Are we looking at an over on a win total? You know, if they achieve 11 plus wins, obviously like a one seed or maybe most wins is in play. Like how does this all come together for Philly for the season?
Yeah, I mean, I'm on the over 10.5 wins. I love you. You want to just talk about a player who unfortunately popped up here with a hamstring injury. Hopefully it's nothing serious. The Eagles are usually pretty conservative with it. But however you want to play Devontae Smith stuff, whether it's fantasy, whether it's long shot offensive player of the year, I think he's set to have a massive year. Like Jalen Hurts is very set in his ways. He loves throwing to guys he's comfortable with, and that's Devontae Smith and Dallas Goedert. You vacate 1,000 yards and a bunch of touchdowns with A.J. Brown, a lot of that's going to go to Devontae Smith. And we saw Devontae Smith in a similar situation 2019. You know, it's Jerry Jeudy, it's Henry Ruggs, it's Devontae Smith in Alabama. Those two guys graduate in 2020. Devontae Smith has an amazing year, and similar to what JSN did last year, right? Oh, no DK Metcalf. What does that mean for JSN? Massive increase in role. And I think Jalen Hurts can throw the ball, but even if you're a skeptic of Jalen Hurts' passing ability, able to carry an offensive player of the year. Look at what Sam Darnold did last year. They were still kind of a run heavy team, but when you have one guy who's an elite receiver, which I believe Devontae Smith is, with that much targets, you can really rack up some crazy stats. So I think, you know, a smash year for Devontae Smith. And yeah, I think they're going to run it back here, win the NFC. So, I mean, the over 10.5, even in down years, last year was a down year for the Eagles. Not a great season. They were still 11-6 and won the NFC East. So I think the floor is pretty high with this team, especially when we look at what they're doing on the defensive side of the ball.
Sean Green with us again, Sports Gambling Podcast. Make sure you check it out. Back with us on Friday nights as well here on the network for football season. By the way, had a brilliant Indianapolis Colts season preview the other day that you wanted to check out.
Great work, JBT.
I was going to name names, but I thought it was great. So we open up our hit with you here about a commonality, something in common when it came to college football, Air Force. I was surprised, shocked by your selection of Air Force, and it's in the College Football Betting Guide. We have another commonality in the College Football Betting Guide, not the selection of Penn State to get to the national championship game. We'll get to that if we have time. Jaren Kiave Sangapulatele is about 80-1 in some spots to win the Heisman, and I got to tell you, the Hawaiian lefty, as you put it, I'm kind of in. I think if they can win those 9 games, we're talking about potentially the best quarterback of his class. You're in on JKS as a long shot to win the Heisman, huh?
100%. And great pronunciation. I've watched that Instagram video I don't know how many times where the newscasters explain how to pronounce his name correctly. Because, I want to buy stock on this guy. They're talking about him becoming the number one pick overall next year. Why not buy low with him on an 80-1 Heisman ticket? 3,400 yards passing as a true freshman, 4 rushing touchdowns, 18 in the air. And he finished the season really strong, which is obviously what you want to see here from a true freshman. 650 yards in those last 2 games, 6 touchdowns, and they're winning games. And, you know, Cal is going to be a very tough travel spot in the all-coastal conference there. For those East Coast teams coming to Cal, that's going to be a tough game for them. And I can see him racking up some great numbers against some tired defenses. They brought in the Rutgers receiver, Ian Strong, Dorian Thomas, the New Mexico tight end there. So they're giving this guy weapons. And also, I know not everyone wants to think about this, but he's just a fun guy to watch. He's a fun guy to root for. And I want to have money on this guy when he's lighting up these defenses late night at Cal. Now, certainly there's some East Coast bias, et cetera, but I think Mendoza really showed that, hey, if you can surprise people, if Cal somehow squeaks into the playoff, if they're in the mix there to win the ACC, maybe over my skis there a little bit, but he's just an awesome player to watch. Fun to root for, and love having him 80-1 for a Heisman.
So last 90 seconds with you, you were the only one that had Penn State in the national championship game. You had them losing to Texas A&M. Big picture, when you look at this Nittany Lions team, you're not the only one that's actually high on them from the perspective of taking advantage of what they have on their schedule. Is that where you lie with this Nittany Lions group? Can Rocco Becht and Iowa State Light get this done out there in the Big Ten?
Yeah, I love the plug-and-play aspect. I love, just basically stomping on James Franklin's grave there going on a playoff run, by winning the big games that he couldn't do it. And you look at their schedule, right? They miss a bunch of the tough teams there in the Big Ten. And then if you have them going over the 8.5 wins, well, then good chance they're going to be in the college football playoff at +425. If they're going to get in, why not go here on a little bit of run? Their tough games are at home. I think the schedule breaks pretty favorably for them. So, yeah, I think Penn State goes on a little bit of a run here in the playoffs.
Sean, we appreciate it, man. Contributions in the guide are always thanked. And, of course, the Sports Gambling Podcast. Good luck to your Eagles this year, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Great. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yep, you got it. Again, Sports Gambling Podcast. Check that out. It's Fridays and just actually live all the time. They have a great network out there, too, so make sure you check that out. And it'll be here, too. Coming up in about 30 seconds, we will continue the cavalcade of wonderful minds here. We've hit a lot of college football today. We've hit in the National Football League, hit a little bit of baseball as well. But let's get back. Mitch Moss is going to sit in for a couple of minutes before he gets started on Follow the Money. I want to hit some of these big moves of Major League Baseball, what he thinks of them, if there's anything, like maybe the Red Sox to win the American League, or more to hit on now that we are post-deadline.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN.com, check it out today, /subscribe. You get in on all the action that includes what we have to offer. The College Football Betting Guide is out now. But we cannot forget, of course, that the Major League Baseball season rolls on. We have a ton of content up there in every single sport. One of the headlining articles, though, from our own Adam Burke about what you can do from a betting perspective now that we are post-trade deadline winners, losers, and futures bets to make. And I know one bet stuck out to somebody here on this desk. Another stuck out to me. Mitch Moss joins us here right before we get to Follow the Money. Mitch co-hosts a program many of you maybe have heard of called Pod to the Futures. The new episode will be out a little bit later today with yours truly. Let's talk a little Major League Baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Burke had a good write-up.
Yeah, he did.
He had two bets to make, one of which, and I went and checked, and you can give the background on why you like it so much, is still available at a better number than he posted in here, the San Francisco Giants to win, or excuse me, worst record, fewest wins. He has it written up here at 28-1, 45-1, still available out there.
Kind of punted on the year yesterday.
Yep.
Big-time sellers, including Robbie Ray and others that they dished off at or before the deadline, and they're not too many games like behind the worst record in all of Major League Baseball right now, so I can get behind this one. Also, 45-1 is available.
Yeah,
I don't know how big this book, how big of a bet this book will take. I tried for a couple of $100 earlier today. They offered me 25. So you might be able to get down more than me, but I thought 28-1 is worth a look. Let me shop around. I found 45, and then I had to get down more on 28, obviously. But JBT, when you look at the overall standings, like, what are they playing for this year? Do they really? It's a first-year rookie manager, by the way, who has been a total miss. And I know those are diehard fans up there. They have not liked the guy from Jump Street. But when you look at the worst record in Major League Baseball right now, the Royals have 46 wins. Your Angels have 43. Those are the worst two teams in the American League. In the National League, the Mets are at 47. The Rockies are at 45. The Giants are at 48 with a win last night. So they are five games clear right now of the Angels. I mean, they're going to be a dumpster fire the rest of the year as well, the Halos. But at 28-1 or higher, when you're five games back, I thought that was absolutely a good look from Adam Burke.
Yeah, that price specifically when you talk about being in contention with where they're at entirely, the Angels will be their biggest competition considering everything they sold off. But at 45-1, which is still out there, I think that's got to be something worth playing. That's a really good find.
Yeah. And we were live on the air yesterday, obviously, during this whole, like, how much hell was going to break loose, right? And the Guardians made a couple of really good moves.
This one I like a lot.
Well, including getting your guy Joe Adell.
The prince that was promised.
And they also then picked up Foster Griffin, which, man, oh, man, the Nationals. You don't want to keep that guy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, and Burke wrote about this. One of the bets that I made immediately when they came down, because when you look at the overall SOS remaining in all of Major League Baseball, the Guardians do have the easiest remaining schedule out of every single team in the league. It's 30th, dead last overall. It is worrisome that they're negative 16 overall with their run differential this year, and they're only one game over 500, but they're three games back. I took them plus 250 to win that division. Mm-hmm. The White Sox are an amazing story. It's been sustainable in this division the entire year so far, so you have to overcome them. You have to hold off the Twins, obviously. The Tigers were big-time sellers yesterday. But when you look at how the form that Gavin Williams is in right now, one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball to go along with Messick, then you get Foster Griffin. Ramirez recently returned. That was too good of a number for me to pass up on them.
So, VSiN.com, check out Burke's write-up, but Guardians to win the division and Giants to have the fewest wins in Major League Baseball, two things that he wrote up there. So I was making the case when we opened the show today from a betting standpoint. I think you can make a relatively strong case that now that the Red Sox have been buyers, because one of my big qualms with them, right, because I have them to make the postseason back when they were about 6-1 to do so. But I wanted to wait to see if they would buy, to see if they would add to the lineup. They did that. Two guys are both on injured list, but they will be back in short order. I think you can make the case that the Red Sox are a team that actually is worth betting to win the American League, only because, and this is my question for you, and the way I presented it was, are we sure the Yankees are the favorite to win the American League? You saw some of the comments yesterday from that front office on Aaron Judge and what the future is going to be for his health. I don't think you're exactly confident that this is going to be great. Cashman on Aaron Judge, quote, "We're currently still very optimistic that he's going to return, but there's challenges with all of that. There's a very high likelihood that he fits the time frame to come back and join us." That's what I'm hoping and holding on to.
Sounds kind of like a prayer almost from him. Let's see how that works out for them then.
Yep.
I mean, they have to, the whole thing with the Yankees, and by the way, think about this for a second. the New York Yankees are the second shot on the board to win the World Series. Mm-hmm. Does that tell you like how weak the American League is overall, but also like the faith that the market has in teams behind the Dodgers?
Yep.
Right?
And the faith that Judge is going to be back.
Absolutely right. And then a bunch of other guys that they need to come back probably would be there as well. And they were not exactly super active at the deadline. Mm-hmm. So I would say this. How much stock are we buying into the race? Because they're probably, I mean, do they win that division? They're 3.5 games up right now. The Yankees 5.5 of the Red Sox. You can bet them right now at 2-1 to make the ALCS. Yeah. They would have to win one series if they get the bye. Right? That's mm-hmm. a pretty good number, I would think. The rest of the American League, you look at the Red Sox run differential. Now, here's where people can come back at me and throw the Yankees in my face. The Yankees do have the number one run differential in the AL at plus 81. After them, it's actually the Detroit Tigers at plus 63. And then it's Boston at plus 60 with the run differential. Why can't Boston come out of the American League?
Yep. Pitching's there. You just needed the bats, and they're going to be healthy and good enough. That's what because my whole premise here is that the American League's mispriced the Yankees at the top.
It is. Yep.
And I want to avoid the Dodgers. I mean, the other team that we talked about at length today, I think in a vacuum, if you look at what the Cubs did at the trade deadline, I think you like it a ton. I think you're like, that's awesome. Good job. It's like you have a kid. It's like when they come up to you and they have like the piece of paper with like a line on it, and you're like, Dad, this is a Cub. You're like, that's great, buddy.
Awesome drawing, pal.
It's not going to win you anything, but great job. It's the same thing with the Cubs. Like, you exist in a universe in which you're, what, 5-ish games back in the division, and the Dodgers are at the top of your league. You did a good job, but why am I supposed to believe that these are things that are worth investing in?
Okay, I would so they're 15-1 to win the World Series, like you said. What would we say about the Brewers if they made the exact moves that the Cubs did?
I mean, I would be all in.
Would we not love it and say, this is the team that can challenge the Dodgers right here? They didn't get Scooble, but they did an incredible job pivoting from that and killing the deadline.
Yep.
But it was the Cubs who did that. The Cubs are, to me, even though they had a great day yesterday, they are so schizophrenic.
Yep.
So maybe that would be a good thing if they're taking on the Dodgers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Overall in a 7-game series. By the way, does it even matter? Matt Vasgersian brought up a great point with this yesterday. You better beat the Dodgers in a 5-game series. You're not going to beat them in a 7-game series.
Yeah.
Because when they can trot out their studs again for a second and or a third time, good luck.
Yes. I that's why I want to get out of the National League in any way, shape, or form. And it goes back to my sports radio take the other day, which was I think it would be an abject failure if the Brewers didn't go and get Scooble. Because if you can trot out Mizorowski and Scooble, and they'll here you go. And like you said, even when you just have those two to go out there in a best of five, a best of seven, you're going to be almost untouchable.
They got Dustin May.
I know.
It's who they got.
Yep.
So what about playing some exactas then?
Like,
you could take some long shots on the Dodgers over teams in the American League.
Sure.
Right? Because they would be a very hefty favorite over any team in the American League.
Right.
So do you want to play some exactas like the Dodgers over the Red Sox, the Dodgers over the Tigers.
Guardians.
Over the Guardians.
Yeah.
Over the Rays. Not the longest of shots at this point, obviously, but building a portfolio other than that, if you're like super confident that the Dodgers are not going to be defeated in the playoffs.
The Dodgers Guardians one does have, I think, some legs to it. Just considering the improvements they've made, if they win that division and where they're going to be at, their pitching's pretty solid. The lineup additions are going to make them dangerous. They're not going to be like the best team, but again, all these American League teams, you throw them in a hat, pull one out, and I don't think you'd be shocked. Outside, I mean, even look like the Astros, man. The Astros continue. I'm amazed that they are leading this division and doing what they're doing.
I know, but who do you trust?
I know.
In the American League West?
Yep. Oh, I had my Ranger stuff, and I've been pounding the table for them, but they go out there, they get swept by the Astros, and they're cooked. All right, really quickly, last 90 seconds, college football betting guide is out. Give me a bet that you submitted in the guide that you like.
I'm buying in on Ole Miss still. I know there's you're the other way, I think, on Ole Miss, but their schedule's difficult, but you can say that about every team in the SEC. You can say that about every team in the Big Ten. I fully believe in Chambliss, man. I think the kid... Okay, you ready for this? I think he is better than Arch Manning going into the season.
Okay, that's fine.
That's not even a hot take.
You listened on the way in where I destroyed Dustin. That's fine. Yeah. You can't say that John Mateer is better than Arch Manning.
Okay, but the question can be asked, though, and I posed this to a guest last week, and I think he kind of scoffed at me.
Yeah.
I think it's fair if I have the question, can I have a little bit more time to watch Arch play?
Sure, of course.
And for those like you who might be right on him or others who are like, I'm telling you, he's the number one pick in the draft, he's the best. Yeah. you can tell me you're right, but also don't get pissed off at me if I want to tell you I just need a little bit more of a sample size before I'm all in on the guy.
I would have been happier with, I think, like four other quarterbacks had Dustin thrown out there. The fact that it was only
Batir really set you off.
Right. I'm like, come on, dude. I mean, I understand he had the hand injury, but like the turnover worthy plays were awful. He was nowhere near as effective a runner last year. Like, it was not very good.
Okay, quickly, name me like three other guys then. Chambliss would be one of them.
Chambliss would be one. Off the top of my head. Give me Byron Brown.
Okay.
Come on, the dual threat right. ability in college football. And we'll go with, because I'm struggling, we have 10 seconds.
Don't say Dante Moore.
Noah Fifita.
Oh, you're going to go real deep there.
Come on now. My guy's awesome. All right, speaking of awesome, Follow the Money, which is coming up next. Make sure you stick around for that. And, of course, VSiN Primetime. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Check out the college football betting guide, folks.